This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get payouts in as fast as 2 hours. There's so many bet types. My favorite, same game parlay bets. There's live betting, player props, futures. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. To get started now, sign up. Please use the promo code COLIN. COLIN. FanDuel Sportsbook makes it easy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. This is episode 42, and it's our first episode of the offseason for the podcast. Obviously, you know, it's been a lot going on this last week or so. I feel like I'm finally starting to get my bearings and just like my legs back under me and but most importantly my mind. When going through the playoffs, well, before we get into this, it's been a great week, as you know. The parade was absolutely incredible, which we'll discuss a little more about that. But as I mentioned, this is the first episode of the offseason. And we're about to hit the ground running. What do I mean by we're about to hit the ground running? If you have not seen, doing a live podcast recording slash show in New York City, Monday night with JJ Redick, the new media, is going to be absolutely insane. The podcast will live in the normal podcast feed. So if you can't make the podcast, the show, there were not a ton of tickets as it is a smaller venue. So, and then obviously it's the summertime and people are traveling and blah, blah, blah. If you can't make it, the podcast will live where every other episode live and you'll be able to check it out. So don't fret, my pet will be just fine. But in saying that, as you know, the parade was about almost a week ago. And it was great. Why was the parade great? I must be honest. After having parades in Oakland, I was a little nervous because I just didn't know what to expect. I am the type of person, like, I like things to stay the same. I'm very shy, which most people would never believe, when it comes to, like, new people. It does not work well with me. It takes me a while to get comfortable with people. Like, I just like things the same. I said all of that to say, after having three parades in Oakland and then coming to San Francisco and having a parade, I was a little skeptical about it. because I just didn't know what to expect. And I love my Oakland family, as Oakland will always be a home, second home to me. Really grew up there and became a man. Not like grew up like we know. I'm Saginaw, Michigan through and through, baby. That doesn't change. But I grew into a man in the city of Oakland. So that place will always have a special place in my heart. Never change. But if I'm ranking parades, because we live in this society that's always trying to like rank and compare dumb shit, I think that may have been the best parade. Why was it the best parade? For a few reasons. Number one, Steph Curry was acting up. And you just never see that. Like, when we won before, Steph didn't act up. Steph was acting up. Klay Thompson was acting up. I mean, this man, by the way, I know we all saw the video, or if you have not seen the video, please go to your Instagram and find the video of Klay Thompson stumbling. The guy stumbled five steps. Then he like runs over the girl and immediately catches his balance, which was the great part. It's like, you run this girl over and that's how you catch your balance. If that girl was not right there, the girl that Klay Thompson ran over, I mean, that ends badly for Klay. Number one, he's tripping on the little, like, I don't know what these call, so forgive me and all the smart people out there that's going to comment and be like, it's called this. Thanks in advance. But the metal little cage thing that's all over the streets and there sometimes on side, he's like tripping. And I know, like, in that situation, it's probably for the train system, the BART, or whatever train system runs, or whatever transportation system, I should say, runs downtown San Francisco on Market Street. I'm sure that's why the cage thing is there for that. But he's, like, tripping over that. And if he falls on that thing, that does not end well. Quite frankly, he runs the girl over and save himself. I thought that was absolutely the highlight of the parade. Or maybe Klay Thompson losing one of his rings. Now, to show y'all how much of a fog I've been in, Klay had his rings, Steph had his rings, Bob had his rings. And I had told myself days leading up to the parade, like, I need to get my rings. Because I don't keep them in the house, like, they're in a safe location. Like, I need to get my rings. Totally forgot. See those guys begin to pray, like, ah, I forgot my rings. Then Klay Thompson goes on to lose one of his rings. And I think he found it. But I'd be the one who definitely lose the rings. So it's probably best that I did not get my rings. And I talked my shit anyway, like I had my rings. So it was great. But man, the fog that I've been, number one, for all our loyal supporters out there, our listeners, I hope you listened to the podcast that I did right after finals, and it was absolutely horseshit. Why was it absolutely terrible? Well, I'll tell you why. It was great having Andre on, like, that's surreal, like, to have him on in that moment, like, right after we win, great. Like, you know, you get Klay Thompson on, that's about as long as you can get Klay to focus. We kept him as long as we could get him to focus. Absolutely incredible. Getting GP on there, absolutely amazing. Even the cameo by the Rook, who can't stay focused for 20 seconds and answer some questions, was great. Having those guys on was incredible. Why was it terrible? It was terrible because I was still in the fog. I didn't know what was going on. I'm sure you probably watched that and be like, Draymond didn't give us much of anything. I had nothing left to give. I was absolutely exhausted. And again, in further explaining the fog that I was in, I totally missed the champagne celebration. Totally missed it. They like did a little small do-over for me when I came in the locker room. As you know, if you see any, If you watch any of the clips that the Warriors posted from the champagne celebration, you'll notice you only see me in like a 5-second clip, maybe for 5 seconds. And it's really just me sitting there spraying the champagne because I missed the whole celebration. Again, just in the fall, on the court. I'm standing on the court and like not realizing pretty much anything that's going on around me. And so I missed that. I then proceeded to miss pictures with everyone. So like if you see the pictures, like I think there may be a picture of me and Clay. Maybe me and Clay. I think it's me and Clay, possibly. But like I don't have a picture with like me and Steph or me and Steve or me and G. Like I totally missed that part of things. I then proceeded to miss 90% of the after party that we had in TD Garden and like some club they got in there. Like who knew it was a club in TD Garden? Huge club. I missed like 90% of the after party. So I said all of that to say, or just to give you a perspective of why, A, that episode was terrible. Because I didn't realize in scheduling the episode with Jackson, and like you just don't know where the emotions were going to be. And for me, my emotions was all over the place. Like, you know, a part of me is sitting there watching the younger guys and enjoying seeing them like win their first championship and they're reacting. A part of me is sitting there trying to process, man, we just won our fourth championship. And let me tell you, the difference in between 4 and 3 may as well be having 1 and 4. Like, it feels so night and day, like the rarefied air that we're in after winning the 4th one, then winning the 3rd one. It's literally like, it's just so rare. I was on the phone with Brian the other day, and I'm just telling him, like, bruh, the difference, like, going from 3 to 4 is insane. He like, yo, I'm telling you, like, it's crazy. That's why when I won my 4th one, I'm just like, nah, like, stop. You don't want to hear anything. And we were just sitting there talking about how, like, the difference in between winning number 3, like, going from 3 to 4 is massive. And so I want to give a big shout out to the guys who has 4 rings. Obviously, your current active players is made up of the Dubs and LJ. So that's a very short list. But Shaq Diesel, who I said a million times was growing up for me like it was Shaq. Like, huge Shaq fan, had to zip up Orlando Magic onesie. My nightlight was Orlando Magic. I had the iron on, half ironed on, and the rest is like going missing. Shaquille O'Neal Magic jersey with the lines in it, the him and Penny jerseys. You know, like, growing up, for me, my favorite player of all time is Shaq. Just the way he dominated. I actually be going back and watch some of Shaq highlights and different stuff of Shaq. And dude was absolutely insane. 4-time club, MJ 4-time club. Obviously MJ 6, but we talking about the 4-time club. MJ, you gonna be a part of this club for now. We got Kobe, Kareem, and like, you know, I can go on and on with this list. Scottie Pippen. The moral of the story, Steve Kerr. I'd be remiss if I didn't say Steve Kerr. But there's 44 guys, 4 of them happen to be from our camp, and in NBA history, there has 4 championships. And so that leads you to the conversation of this all 75 team. Now, we're not getting into that. I'm just joking. Partly joking, partly serious. But anyway, it's like, it's really still hard for me to put in words. But nonetheless, back to what I was saying anyway. Trying to put into context, like, we just won our 4th ring and the emotions of it. Standing on that stage, looking out at the Boston fans who, I don't even need to revisit all of the things that they were saying and their antics. But to watch them sit there and watch us hoist the trophy, my emotions and my mind was just all over the place. And so just kind of missed the moment. I remember a story, Peter Guber, who's one of the majority owners, mentor of mine, one of the majority owners of the Golden State Warriors. He told me a story years ago. He said, Draymond, I always wanted to win. I always wanted to win an Oscar, you know, and you do all of these things and you put these movies together and like the ultimate goal is to win an Oscar. And I'm like, yeah, it's great. He said, and Draymond, we finally got the movie. We got our Oscar. He said, and I'm on like a chair in back of everybody, like trying to stand up and so I can be in the picture. He said, and in that moment, I realized the picture is the least important part of this journey. It's the actual journey that you appreciate. It's the times on set with the actors and with the directors and producers and actresses. That's what you appreciate. You appreciate the journey. You appreciate the process of getting there. And it took me to have to trying to hop on a chair in the back and like be in the picture to realize like it's all about the process and journey. And so a part of me is just sit standing there and like not even really caring about the picture or about holding a trophy. Like I never held a trophy on stage. First time I held a trophy was like in the pictures afterwards where you take the individuals, but really hoisted the trophy was the parade. And so it was a surreal moment for me, but it was also a little confusing, if you will. And what I mean by confusing is just, it was just all over the place. I was all over the place. So that was kind of the ending of it for me, or yeah, essentially the ending. But I also want to walk you back to games 5 and 6. A very interesting detail. I think a couple of people picked up on it, but most people didn't. I wore the same outfit game 5 and game 6. If you would have saw my packed bag on the way back from Boston or way to Boston, very small bag because I didn't have many clothes. I wore my same black Converse sweatsuit to game 5 and to game 6. What was the significance behind that? The significance behind that was I felt like leaving Boston that I was in a war. With the people screaming and yelling the way they were, the disrespect, I felt like I was in a war. And no disrespect to our soldiers and to our armed forces as a whole and actually going to war. When I say we appreciate everything our armed services do for our country, for us as American citizens, so I'm not making the comparison as if I was going to like real war. I was going to war in my world, and my world is basketball. And I felt like I was going into a war. And so my mindset was all black, everything. Like I'm going to take something, and that's just kind of where I was mentally. I also didn't want to spend any energy on what I was going to wear that day. For me going into game 5, Hazel's asking me, she's like, do I need to iron your clothes for you before, like, you want to sit your clothes out before you take a nap? I'm like, yeah, I think I'm just going to wear an all-black jogging suit. And she's like, okay, well, if you change your mind, you know, let me know or sit. And then when I woke up from my nap, she's like, hey, you got something for me to iron? I say, no, I'm 100% wearing an all-black jogging suit. And then, you know, go to game 5. We win game 5. And I told her, I'm going to take this jogging suit off. I'm going to pack it up. No, I'm not washing it. No, I'm not. I didn't have time to send it to the cleaners or anything anyway because we left the next morning after game 5. This is going straight in the bag. And I'm going to game 6. And I'm going to wear the same outfit. That's exactly what I did. And the result was the exact same. I think after game 4, we knew we had them. Like, after game 4, I'm like, all right, I'm wearing all black. It's going to be a funeral. Game 5, it's time to go ahead and really try to kill these, you know, like kill these boys. Game 6, we put the dagger in these boys. But that was kind of like that was my mindset. And so that's how I went into game 5 and game 6 with the absolute same outfit on. It was incredible. It was a part of my journey. And for me, like I said, that was my mindset, and I absolutely enjoyed that. Now, like I said, I knew after game four, we knew after game four, and really after game three, but especially after game four, that, you know, we had, that was kind of it. And so you go into game five where they, you know, we take a big lead, they fight back. The biggest shot of the series was Jordan Poole's shot before the end of quarter number three in game five, where he banked the three in. Why was that the biggest shot of the series? The reason that was the biggest shot of the series was because they had fought back in the third quarter, which we had dominated third quarters. They fought back in that third quarter. And when they fought back, they had taken the lead, and Jordan hit the shot, and we went up one going into the fourth quarter. And I know to most people it's like, well, they only up one, no big deal, it's right there. But what that did to them mentally, for them to see, man, we just had this incredible quarter, and we're going into the fourth quarter down. It didn't matter whether they were down by 1 point or 10 points. To have the quarter that they had, to take the lead, and then go into the next quarter down, that for them, I feel like, was a dagger when Jordan hit that shot. Now, did they quit after that? No. We went out and we immediately took over the fourth quarter of game five. But you just knew, like, they didn't have, like, they made the comeback, but they didn't have enough to get over the hump. And if they never took the lead and they're going into fourth quarter down one, it's a totally different mindset. But the fact that they took the lead and then they still went into the fourth quarter down, I think for them mentally, that was like a gut punch for them. And so, huge shot from Jordan. Then you go into game six. They start off. They make their run. We all expected it. We all expected, like, this. They're fighting for their lives in front of their home crowd. They're going to come out with a bang. They start off 12-2. And then things start to change. And at that point, you knew. We took that first blow. That was it. That was it. And then, obviously, we go on and we do what we had to do in order to talk to y'all the way we have been talking to y'all. And by the way, let's get into that. Twitter beef. Twitter beef with everyone. I don't have Twitter beef with anyone, just an FYI. Because why would I have beef? I'm kind of just telling y'all, like, what it is and telling y'all how I feel and, like, most importantly, to shut up. Because, quite frankly, we don't want to hear it. And so you may have seen me at the parade, and I'm just, like, in every interview, I'm like, shut up. And the reason being is because you have these experts that does all this talking, less analyzing, but a bunch of talking heads, and they just talk. But what about getting back to actually analyzing the game? What about, why is it so important? I know why it's important, actually. But all these hot takes, like, what about explaining the game of basketball and what's going on and, like, what it means and the games within the game and the advantages that one could get. When in the NBA Finals, for those of you that don't understand, it is the smallest edge that it takes, and that's who's going to win the NBA Finals. It's the smallest edge. It's not who can score the most points. It's not, is Steph Curry going to score 39 points and Jason Tatum going to score 29 points or 39 points or whatever. It's not that. That's not what wins you the NBA Finals. It is the smallest edge that wins someone the NBA Finals. And because all these dumb talking heads never done it, they don't understand it. Even the one that has done it don't act like he's done it because he's an idiot and a moron and wasn't really that good of a player. And so I'm talking about Kendrick Perkins, by the way. So he don't even understand like how to even speak about winning a championship and the things that go into it, and like the advantages that you need to gain or lack thereof in giving someone an advantage. I mean, it comes down, look, I'm very close with Jason Tatum. Obviously, he's been on the show, which we appreciate. But that's, JT is a little brother to me. It was bothering me to not speak to him at all during the finals. Aaron Miles, super tight with Aaron Miles. I mean, he used to sit and play dominoes entire flight with Aaron Miles when he was here the last few years. It was bothering me not to talk to them guys. Because when you've built a relationship like I've built with those two, like, a part of me is like, man, I want to say what's up to my brother. But the other side of me, no, I don't have absolutely nothing to say to him or A. Miles, neither one of them. Because it's the smallest edge that wins you an NBA Finals. And you can't let anything get in the way of that. And so for me, in going through that, yes, that bothered me. But I just talked to A. Miles and JT on the phone a couple days ago. And I told them, like, I FaceTimed both of them, like, what's up? And the look on both of their faces when they answered the phone, obviously it's not at the same time. But when they answered the phone, the look on both of their faces was priceless. I wish I would have screenshotted it, but I didn't. Because some things are just for those moments, and that's one of them. But the look on both of their faces was priceless. But I called both of them, and I said, hey, man, I'm just calling to break the ice. Like, I know we ain't spoke a few weeks, but I'm just calling to break the ice. And I specifically waited till after the parade to break the ice because, you know, like, you're still in those moments and, you know, you're preparing for the parade and it's still early. So I waited till after the parade to hit both of them, chop it up, check in, and it was great. It was absolutely incredible. But I brought that up and just speaking on the edge and the smallest edge that it takes to win the NBA Finals. And what is the significance of that? The significance of that is ESPN had us like 80 to 20. And what is that? What do I mean by 80-20? 80-20 rule. We've heard of that before, right? These people had us with a 20% chance to win the NBA Finals and an 80% chance to lose. So I asked a question. And apparently it was like made by the Basketball Power Index. So I asked a question. Who makes these, like who comes up with these numbers? Like, what's the formula? Is it the formula, like, is the formula made based off of the idiots that be talking about the game, that just be having talk about the game of basketball? Because that's clearly what it looks like. Like, how does your index come up with an 80-20 chance for us? But it's because, I don't know. I don't know what makes up this index and, like, how you come up with that. But clearly it's flawed and clearly broke. I think after game four, we might have been still like 20-something percent chance of winning, which is absolutely insane because that means you didn't watch game four and be like, uh-oh, this ain't right. Something here not right, and I see what's happening here. No, but most people can't see that because they don't quite understand. So let's get back into these talking heads. Skip Bayless. No, I don't want to come on your show. No, I'm not going to come on your show and debate. But if you want to analyze the game of basketball and we come on there and we do that, I'd absolutely consider it. I'd consider it. I'll say I'm going to come, but I will consider it. But if you want to sit there and debate, I didn't go to law school, brother. Like, I don't want to come on your show and debate sports or debate anything else because I didn't go to law school. If I wanted to debate something, then I would have went to law school and really did that, not try to make basketball that. Like, no, basketball is beautiful. Basketball There's a lot to analyze in the game of basketball if you know the game. And I think that's a problem a bunch of you guys run into. You can't give analysis because you don't know the game. So you end up trying to like debate with somebody and like that's whatever, teach his own. But like, I don't want to sit there and debate with you on TV because quite frankly, there's someone that's never watched your show. And they may be flicking through the channels and see me on your show. And because they've never watched the show and they flick through the channel and they see me on your show, they may mistakenly take me for the fool as opposed to knowing right away that you're the fool. And I'd hate for them to mistakenly take me for the fool that you are or get me confused with the idiot that you are. Like, I don't have much of an interest for that. I wouldn't want that on my name and to like no, it's very evident what you are and who you are. Like, we know that. It's concrete. Like, we know exactly who you are. Clown. And I just don't think I'd be doing myself any service or any good by coming on your show. I'm also not sure that I would even want you as a guest on the Draymond Green show. Because if you go back and you look at the resumes of guys on the show, you don't qualify. Like, you don't qualify for this show. Your resume not there. So I probably won't come on your show unless you want to sit there and analyze the game of basketball. Then I'll come on, maybe. But I'm not sure. And the only other outlet I would really be able to talk to you on is right here on the Draymond Green show. And again, your resume doesn't quite crack. It doesn't quite crack the code. Maybe we'll change that standard one day and have a guy like yourself on. But as of right now, especially coming off this fourth championship, you're not welcome, my friend. You are not welcome here. And by the way, you come out talking about the new media. You're not the new media. You're the real media. You are the real media. You're right. You've attached your name to a black man for all of these years. And that black man is none other than King James, LeBron James himself. And you tried to tear him down as much as you can all these years. So you're right. You are the real media. You are exactly who I speak of when I say this is the new media. We do this differently. You're right. I'm happy you admitted it, real media. But the new media is here to stay. And we're taking this thing over. You know why? Because people don't want to hear that old, dried up, tired stuff that you talking about. Nobody want to hear that no more. The new media, baby. It's a reason JJ Redick going on TV and crushing everybody. It's a reason they keep calling Patrick Beverly back to TV. It's a reason why CJ McCollum just signed that deal. It's a reason why I signed the deal that I signed. It's a reason why this podcast, the Draymond Green Show, is doing the numbers that it's doing. It's a reason why. The new media. Don't nobody want to hear all that tired stuff you're talking about anymore, Mr. Real. Stop attaching your name to LeBron James. Stop, because you know LeBron James and his incredible life that he's lived and continues to live, that there will always be something for you to talk about if I just attach my name to LeBron James. We don't want to hear it, brother. It's over. It's the new media. We're here to stay. So you keep talking that real media stuff. I'm happy you did. You showed your hand. You are exactly who I thought you were. Exactly who I thought you were. Kendrick Perkins, you act like this clown, and it's baffling to me. He could never be you. You know why he could never be you? Because he never done it. You go up here acting like him. You don't have to do that, buddy. You played. You did it. Go talk about it. Or can you not? I'd hope that you can. With all these hot takes you make, you should be able to. You don't have to act like that, my man. You don't have to go up there. You go from being enforcer to coon. How does that happen? At least you act like an enforcer. I didn't really ever take you for one. Which is why when we were playing the Cavs in the NBA Finals and I was shaking them pom-poms and people was like, oh, man, I remember my Twitter blowing up. Like, you leave LeBron alone. You shouldn't be shaking pom-poms at LeBron. Bron, my big brother, I would never shake pom-poms at him. Also, who's he cheering for? I was shaking pom-poms at the guy in the suit in the back over in the bench. Shaking my pom-poms at him. That guy. You don't have to act like that, man. You can go on TV and be real and, like, stand on business. You don't got to go up there doing that stuff you doing. This man just went on JJ's podcast the other day and said, I was praying that LeBron James got hurt. What? Are you kidding me? You actually thought that was okay to admit? Come on, cuz. You can't think that's okay to admit. Even if you felt that way, which, by the way, why do you feel that way? That's a problem. But even if you felt that way, hey, take that one to the grave, my man. And JJ, being the scholar that he is, the great individual that JJ is, and most importantly, the new media. Why is that significant right now? Because the new media, we also protect guys. Like, we protect. This isn't about tearing you down. This isn't real Skip Bayless trying to tear you down. We don't do that. Now, we do critique. Something's off. We're going to talk about it. But we're not going to just try to tear you. No. We're going to try to help that. And so JJ, being the new media member that he is, then tries to give you an opportunity to walk it back. Like, you mean like you sprained ankle? No, ACL. Are you kidding me, bruh? There was once upon a time, there was once a point in time where ACLs was ending people's careers, man. You remember this, how we feed our families? We always talk, like, I don't know if you do because it's not much substance, but I always talk about, like, when you get hurt, you lead a court. Like, you live that. Like, you don't lead a court and then it's like, all right, I'm not hurt no more. I can walk now. But when the game's going on and when practice's going on, I'm back on crutches, like it's a video game. No, you really live this stuff. So for you to prey on another man's downfall, that's a character flaw, my man. If you prey on somebody's downfall once, you're going to prey on it again. Not necessarily that you prey on LeBron's downfall, because y'all are in, like, living two totally different worlds. But that just means you're the type of person that'll prey on someone's downfall. That's a little whack to me. That's not new media-ish. I don't understand. You don't have to go on TV and act like that, brother. You played. Act like it. Stop doing this. Stop making a fool of yourself. You played. Act like it. Nicholas Wright, how you doing? A lot of hot takes. You admitted the other day, we make hot takes. Analyze the game, my man. Now, total opposite of Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless has kind of rolled LeBron James and tried to tear him down for all these years, and that's how he fills his segments on his show. Nick Wright has been total opposite. LeBron could go 1 for 19. Nick Wright going to say he made one shot, and he was the best player on the floor. What happened to the days of, again, analyzing the game, honest opinions? You got, like, clowns like Bill Simmons, who's like a Boston diehard fan through and through, that's not really giving you the real because he's not impartial. Like, what happened to the days of doing a great job in media and your stories and your takes and just giving analysis, not being a homer, not Kendrick Perkins going on First Take and then going on the Boston Celtics home TV show? Like, yeah, we're going for the Celtics. Dude, you were just doing national TV about these games. By the way, the issue that I have with this topic in particular is y'all are misguiding people. Like, people actually see y'all on TV and they actually think y'all know what y'all talking about. So then when they actually think that you guys know what you're talking about, they may be betting on games and they're watching you and like listening like to Kendrick Perkins say dumb things about the Celtics and the Warriors. They may believe you. And you're not giving them the real because your heart's in it and because you're not doing a great job at what you should be doing, which is analyzing the game of basketball. If you're going to talk about the game, analyze the game. Say why this is wrong. Say why that happened. You can't just say, oh, Draymond played terrible and he looked like the old him, or Al Horford is who he used to be. Like, how though? Why? Explain to us what you mean. And you have to explain it. Analyze it. Help us. Not just, don't just be these hot take guys, man. Explain what you're talking about. Be thorough. It's important. People are listening to y'all and think y'all actually know what you're talking about. It's important. You know why? Another reason it's important to make sure these guys act the way they should be acting, to carry themselves the way they should be carried. I was once suspended from Game 7 of the NBA Finals. I'm sorry, Game 5 of the NBA Finals. What's the significance of that? Why does that matter in this conversation? Because again, these guys' opinions matter. I'm certain that some media members had conversations with people about in the league office about whether I should be suspended or not for that game. Your opinion matters. Hard to trust those opinions. Hard to be honest in those situations. If you can't even analyze a series and say X, Y, and Z. Now, granted, when I'm done playing, I'm sure I'm going to want to see the Golden State Warriors win. I spent 10 years of my life here. Hopefully, we'll spend the next 5, 6, or whatever here. So I'm sure I'll feel a certain way about the Golden State Warriors. Okay. If I go on any show, if I'm on Inside the NBA, I'm going to break the game down and break the series down and tell you why this matters or why that matters and how this helps and how it doesn't. Like, you still have to do that. You can't just be like, oh, I want the Celtics to win. Like, no. They're paying you to analyze and, you know, like, you're doing the countdown shows. You got to tell people what's going on, man. They trust you. So they think. They trust you. You have to be able to thoroughly help break this game down. And we don't see a bunch of that. And it's baffling to me. It's baffling. You know, come out, hot take this, hot take that. Back to your boy Nicholas. You spoke all of that stuff about Andrew Wiggins. You spoke all of that stuff about how the Warriors were done and like would never win again and Steph needs to leave Golden State and blah, blah, blah. And then once you're wrong, you then try to go on TV the other day or whatever you were on and say, that's what we do. We make hot takes and no. You're wrong, brother. You got to stand on that. Those hot takes don't just get the roll off. See, that's what y'all accustomed to. I say to make these asinine statements, and then once I'm done, it's just over. No. You got to stand on that. Changing your opinion in the middle of the... No, brother. Stand on that. Stand on your word. It's important to stand on that. Not just flipping and flopping and all this and that. What do you stand for? I don't understand. It's baffling to me. We got to be better. And I only care. It's because I've transitioned into that industry. I'm now a part of that industry. Not part of the real media, though. I'm the new media. But I'm a part of the industry. And I know how you guys are viewed. And I would love to change the view before I'm really seen as a part of that industry, because it's just a little unfortunate. Like, you get media people out here just making these crazy statements and, like, saying these things. I tweeted at Uncle Oak or Instagram story, one of them. And I said, I got an Uncle Oak story type story for this podcast. Let me give it to you.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you, here on Next Question, it's going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun.
And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And speaking of media just talking, there was a clip going around during the finals. By the way, these are all the things that be going on during the finals, and the guy sitting there like, Draymond, the podcast is blah, blah, blah. These are all the things going on in the finals that y'all really don't know going on behind the scenes. And I really haven't had time to talk about them because I'd be so locked in on task at hand. But there was a clip that surfaced, and Cedric Maxwell says to Gary Payton Sr., if Draymond was acting like that in the 80s and 90s, he'd get punched in his face. He'd get punched right in the mouth. Blah, 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 whatever he said. So here's the thing. Let me explain something to y'all. I play basketball. When I go on a basketball court, I'm not going out there to punch somebody in the mouth. I'm not going out there to try to pick a fight with anybody. I am going out on a basketball court to simply win a basketball game. Hopefully play well in doing it. In doing that, you're going to try to find any small edge that you can because the smallest edge wins you the NBA Finals. Okay. So if I go on the court and I talk junk, I talk to somebody, listen, you heard it here first. I'm not going out there trying to fight anybody. I play basketball. Will I fight someone? If I had, of course. Like, grew up my whole life fighting. I don't fight anymore. It's pointless. So here it is. I'm telling you here first. When I go on the court and I'm talking junk, I am not talking junk because I want to fight someone. It's not what I'm going out there and do. Quite frankly, because it's going to cost me too much money if I do go out there and fight someone. So I'd rather save that money. All right, now that we got that. Sometimes in trying to gain an edge on the court, it does lead to you having beef off the court, you leaving the court pissed off. Not really me in most cases, but some people leaving the court pissed off, and it carries on outside of that. To be quite frank with you, I don't really know of many guys fighting off the court even when it carries outside of that, but I'm sure it can, whatever. If I had to fight, great, we'll fight. But I said all of that to say, you got to fight, like I said, you'll fight, I'll fight, it is what it is, but nobody's really fighting. It's NBA, okay? So, multi-billion dollar organization. Guys just aren't running around fighting. But, so Cedric Maxwell makes the statement, blah, blah, blah. He does his thing. So now, after game five, almost positive it was after game five. Yeah, I think it was after game five. I'm almost positive. After game five, I go out and I do the Scott Van Pelt show. And then I see to the left, my family's still sitting in the stands over where they sit. So I go over there, kiss my family, hug them. I'm like, all right, I have to now head back to do, I just finished Scott Van Pelt. I now have to head back and do the media room. So in doing that, where their seats are in the tunnel, I'm about to walk out of the tunnel. Who's standing there? Gary Payton Sr. and Cedric Maxwell, along with a few other people, but those are the two that I see and I noticed. So if GP's standing with his back to the stand, Cedric Maxwell is like standing over here. So I like come into between them and I put my back to Cedric Maxwell and I tell GP, nobody should ever be able to come to you and like think they can talk about me and they got a friend in you. Like, GP, that's my OG, man. Like, even before young GP got here, I used to play dominoes with GP. Like, Oakland, real Oakland legend. Like, nothing but respect and love forever for GP. OG. I said, he shouldn't be able to come to you like he got a friend in you and talk about me. Because ain't nobody going to come to me and talk about GP like they got a friend. No, no. You're going to do one or two things. Either you're going to go tell GP that you told me you're going to punch him in his mouth, or I'm telling you right now, I'm going to go tell him that you said you're going to punch him in his mouth. Because if you're walking around saying you're going to punch this guy in his mouth, I think he should know. So I told GP that. And GP like, man, I ain't getting into all that. He's standing right there. I said, I know he's standing right here. That's why I came and said it to you right now. Because I saw you earlier. But I ain't say it to you earlier because I want him to know when you're gonna talk about punching somebody in the mouth, you got to stand on that. You can't just be walking around talk like, oh, he'll get punched. Well, you do the punching. You got to stand on that. And so I asked, you know, GP like, nah. And so then Cedric Maxwell like, oh, man, I'm going to get out of here. Of course you are. Because you walking around talking about you're going to punch someone in the mouth or somebody will get punched in the mouth or whatever. But I'm playing basketball and I'm trying to gain an edge in a basketball game. Punching in the mouth has absolutely nothing to do with basketball. So let's just keep this basketball. And so then he walks out. He walks off. I finished talking to GP. So then I walk out the same tunnel because I'm going to do my media. And he's standing there like, Draymond, let me talk to you. And I'm like, it ain't really nothing to talk about. Like, you said I would get punched in the mouth. So I want to know, are you going to punch me in the mouth? No, I ain't going to punch you in the mouth. I appreciate your game. Of course you do. So then stop talking about that. Like, there's absolutely no reason for you to be talking about me getting punched in the mouth unless you're going to punch me in the mouth. And so it's just this whole thing of like, you know, you saw Russ the other day, check, skip, Payless. Like, Russell Westbrook. Like that man's name is Westbrook. Like, that man has children. That man has a family. That's a family name. You're talking about Russell Westbrook. Again, people just run off talking and think they don't have to stand on that. You got to stand on them words, man. Your words mean something. You got to be willing to stand on that. And so that's like my whole thing with this new media. Stand on that. Real media? But calling this man Westbrook. Like, what? Who are you? So, hopefully these guys will see this. They'll look at it. They'll go respond and say, I'm not doing that, Bob. But if you know what's good for you, you got to make the adjustment, man. Because people tired of that old ass tire stuff y'all giving. They sick of it. Yours truly, the new media. Lastly, before I get out of here, let's talk about free agency. Before I get to this will actually lead right into where I'm going. Brian Windhorst said after game 5, that was a pocketbook win. The Warriors bought that win. I got no problems with Brian Windhorst. I got no problems with Brian Windhorst at all, actually. I have a problem with that statement. The reason I have a problem with that statement is because it's very contradictory. How is it contradictory? Well, quite frankly, you guys said paying Klay Thompson the money that he made coming off of his injury was a bad idea by Joe Lacob. They should have paid him less money. Blah, blah, blah. Ah. You guys also said Steph Curry and the extension he signed, it was over. And that was it. And blah, blah, blah. You guys also said when Andrew Wiggins came to this team that we never win again. That we took on that bad contract and he's a zero and a bust and blah, blah, blah. You guys also said that I was washed up. Those are our 4 highest paid players. You had an issue with every single contract. The moment it's beneficial, it's no longer a problem. Now we bought the win. How is that possible? After y'all had an issue with every single one of the contracts I just mentioned, our top 4 contracts, you guys had an issue with. How is there any such thing as a pocketbook win? For a team that y'all said was pathetic, that would never win. That's baffling to me. Now, got to give Joe Lacob some credit. We do have the highest payroll in the NBA. In large part due to we drafted well. Our team, our front office, our ownership, the ownership group, they've done an incredible job. And number one, building the business of the Golden State Warriors, as we know, it was not great in 2011 when they bought this team. So they built the business, an incredible one. They've drafted well. Shout out to Bob Myers, the guy who did not receive a single vote for GM of the year or executive of the year. He did not receive a single vote. A single vote for a team that y'all said would never win again, would never do anything. The guy who put this roster together did not receive a single vote for executive of the year. And for the smart aleck that's out there, he may have received one. I don't think he received a single vote. That's no slight to whoever won executive of the year. But the guy who won a championship that put this roster together that y'all said was total horseshit didn't receive one. Okay. So we already know that there's a problem with the voting system. First team, MVP, DPOY, you name it. We already know there's a problem there. So that just falls right into the category with that. It's pathetic. But the fact that we can have a pocketbook win on a roster that y'all said would never compete, that is baffling to me. Like I said, we do have the highest payroll. Got to give Joe Lacob credit there. Guy is not afraid to spend, which, by the way, we got some important stuff coming up, which we'll talk about in a second, and the importance of it. But you can't say that. You just can't. Something that's baffling to me is that the Warriors, Steph Curry, he's been here 13 years, drafted. Klay Thompson, 11, drafted. Myself, 10, drafted. Wiggins, traded for, not signed, we traded for Andrew Wiggins. James Wiseman, drafted. I think the next highest paid player after that, if I'm not mistaken, is Jonathan Kuminga, drafted. Kevon Looney, drafted. The fact that we're paying the same tax penalties that teams are that can go buy a team is crazy. Like, the fact that there are no, like, okay, so you can go further into the tax if you have bird rights. But the fact that we've drafted all of these guys, and yes, the contracts get up there when you have success, but why is the tax rate the same exact tax rate as far as penalties go for someone if they just went and bought, when we say bought a team, if they went and signed every free agent that they didn't draft? Why is the taxes the same? I don't understand that. Like, so to get penalized for drafting well, that doesn't really make sense to me. Because then what's the incentive of drafting well and keeping your guys, if that's going to be the case? Prime example being, we're in free agency. You got Kevon Looney, who's a free agent, who's going to do extremely well, who's put himself in a great position. You get further penalized for giving him more money, but you drafted him with the 30th pick. Loon is by far, next to Moses Moody, by the way, the most professional guys I've ever seen. Incredible, don't miss a beat. Not late, no issues. They'll never piss Steve Kerr off. Like, guys are great. You drafted Looney with the 30th pick, and now you're going to get penalized for that. Does not make sense to me. Doesn't make sense. We signed GP when no one else wanted GP, obviously not drafted, but, and so if there's a penalty there, I understand. You got Otto Porter, who's also a free agent, Nemanja Bjelica, Andre Iguodala. If there's other penalties, I get it. But for these guys, myself being one of them, that's like drafted here, the fact that you face the same penalties is baffling to me. It's baffling. It doesn't make sense because, again, what's the point of drafting well if you're going to get penalized ultimately for drafting well? you can't help but look at OKC, who has all these draft picks, and then wonder, they may be able to, in the long run, keep two or three of these guys. Because the money is going to cost so much if these guys turn out to be good. But they're drafting these guys. And so that right there is a little baffling to me. Like I said, I give Joe Lacob a lot of credit for all that he's been willing to spend and to keep this team going. Because like I told y'all before, we ain't done. We not done. We're going to keep this train rolling. But the fact that there's no relief there is just baffling to me. So I think that's something that need to be looked at in this next CBA. Because, you know, and I know people will make the argument and say, but you got to help the small market teams out. Guess what? I don't really care. You help them where you may, but, my pay doesn't get raised. I live in expensive-ass San Francisco. And so the max salary, if I make the max salary in Oklahoma City, that money stretches way further than my max money would stretch in San Francisco. But they don't say, we're going to prorate your salary because the rent is more expensive or to buy is more expensive per square. They don't do that. But when it comes to small market teams, we get punished the same. If you're going to do that, then you got to make it that way across the board. Not just for a small market team or for this or that. Then you have to take into account all of those disadvantages and advantages across the board, including for the players. And with that, I'm out of here. That's a wrap from this episode of Draymond Green Show. Your next episode after this will be JJ and I. Hope all of you enjoy it. Until next time, by the way, guest is on the way back. JJ is not a guest. He's been a guest. JJ and I are collabing and doing Old Man and the Three and the Draymond Green Show, a collab. So JJ is not a guest. But guests are on the way back, and we're going to have some big ones. Stay locked in. Much love. That's a wrap from the Draymond Green Show. Peace.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast.
Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.